Hello everyone and welcome to Shadow Talk, a weekly threat intelligence and information security podcast brought to you by the ReliQuest Threat Research Team. My name is Stefano and I'm really pleased to say that we've got another episode coming for you. This one's really, really good. There's a lot to talk about. With me on the line, we've got one of ReliQuest CISOs, Rick Holland. Hey, Rick, how's it going?
Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good morning.
Good everything to everyone. Dean is here as well. Hey, Dean, how's it going?
Hey, everybody. Happy to be here.
Good. Well, happy to have you. And then we've got Ivan as well. How are you, Ivan?
Hey, I'm doing good. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. So there's, you can't see them because you're listening to this podcast, but there's plenty of smiling faces in front of me. So that's a good sign for a great episode. And we've got quite a lot to talk about because we're going to cover the updates on what happened with the MOVEit vulnerability and Club claiming responsibility for it and everything else that we're going to uncover in a second. Then we're going to be talking about info-stealing malware, sort of what we're seeing from the trenches, what we're seeing in cyber criminal forums. And then we're going to have a small section about the new Verizon's DBIR report. It goes out every year. Every year it's a must read for everyone in the industry. So Rick is going to help us unpack what's in there and discover like the juiciest bits. So let's get started right away with the MOVEit vulnerability. If you've listened to our previous episode last week, we've covered some of that. But of course, when these major vulnerabilities become public, there are a lot of important updates that we need to track in the interest of responding to these incidents, just being aware of what is done and responding to future ones as well. So Dean, Rick, I know you've been at the forefront of this. Can you give us, the audience, a sort of update of what happened since last week? And yeah, anything new that we've discovered, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the initial response was there are a bunch of these MOVEit IT transfer servers that were being actively exploited. And what we originally uncovered is a bunch of data exfiltration, no encryption, no post-exploit activity. And at the time, earlier last week, when the ReliQuest threat hunting team and threat research really triggered a response, you know, we were responding to these on an individual or a case-by-case basis, right? However, you know, information was released really fast, as you can see. I mean, if you type in MOVEit right now, it pulls up, what, like, thousands of articles, probably. Hopefully we're closer to the top, but outlining, you know, an SQL injection vulnerability that was previously unknown, and ultimately deploys a web shell that I believe is being tracked under Lemur Loot.
Well, really good. And then we've also seen first Microsoft attributing this sort of mass exploitation of this vulnerability to Klopp, and then Klopp claiming
attributing it to himself.
And yeah, exactly. Klopp saying, yes, you're correct. We've seen
that. On Wednesday, we were monitoring the Klopp leak site. So on Wednesday, they put a posting up claiming responsibility for it, giving very specific instructions on how victims could reach them. What's different this time around is in the past, they would reach out to victims directly, and they may still be doing that with, you know, they're also known to kind of big game hunt. So they may be already engaged directly with some of the bigger brands that are out there. But for everyone else, they're kind of casting a wide net. They basically set a deadline of June 14th to say, if you do not begin negotiations by June 14th, basically we're going to dox all your data up on the Klopp leak site. So the countdown clock started. They posted that on Wednesday evening US time. And you know, they've got an email address that they want the victims to email, and then basically they would switch to direct communication with those victims. They claim that they will delete the data, that they'll make a video of them deleting the data. They talk about their, I don't know, integrity when it comes to, they're going to do what they say. I'd caution everybody, as far as no honor among thieves, although Klopp does kind of pride themselves on doing what they say, but they are still criminals out there. So, you know, everyone needs to know if they were a victim of this attack. So hopefully people know if they're running the MOVEit software that's out there. And if so, you know, the main advice I would have And Dean could probably add a little bit more on the hands-on keyboard stuff that we'd recommend to do. But from a program CISO perspective, you need to be talking to your inside and outside counsel, your senior leadership, the board, potentially regulators, depending on what industry you're in, if you're considering engaging with them, and then if you're considering paying whatever the ransom that they would have. Again, no honor among thieves, but it is a business decision. It's a risk-based decision. One of the things that I've been talking to our customers about is really understanding what data was stored in the MOVEit, file repository. Perhaps the data isn't as sensitive and maybe it's less risk. Of course, there could be the nature of these systems, right, is to A, share large files that are too large for email, but then B, give you a secure way to share sensitive information, as we've seen on some of the reports from some of the early victims that are out there. So you got to understand your exposure. And so step one is knowing what was exposed on any of the solutions that you run for MOVEit. But then the other is I would reach out to your key suppliers from a third-party risk management perspective, and the key suppliers that hold sensitive data of yours. So hopefully you have your tiers of your suppliers. And I would have your GRC team reach out to them, ask if they use the MOVEit software. If so, what data is there? What is the exposure? Was there? So there's the inside angle for your org, and then there's the third party risk element to this. And the other thing I would say is, you're going to want to be monitoring, and this is something that Gray Matter Digital Risk Protection and ReliaQuest we're monitoring the CLOP leak site, because on the 14th, you're going to want to know if any of the supply chain partners that you have come up there with the data, and CLOP will give that data away. You probably want to acquire that data and then see if any of your data was in a supplier's data. So, June 14th is going to be an interesting time for a lot of organizations that are out there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Rick, I got to say, I love when you put your CISO hat on and you just like dispense this pure gold knowledge. So yeah, thank you for that. Dean, is there anything that you wanted to add to it?
I mean, like Rick had mentioned, like a perspective on like hands-on keyboard. And I think that's what's, in my opinion, why CLOP is becoming so notorious, is there is no post-exploitation activity, right? Like they're identifying web servers, or excuse me, file transfer servers, multiple times now, exploiting them in mass, grabbing all of the data, and then extorting victims, right? And they're doing it pretty successfully, right? Like, I mean, I don't want to like shout out like a ransomware group, but it's very nefarious, and it gives me goosebumps when I talk about it, because the success rate is so high. So when we respond to these things, it's really difficult, right? Because what can we do? We can harden, and we have to prepare for the worst, right? So kind of like Rick was saying, reach out to your legal counsel. If you have a publicly exposed MOVEit server, I would assume breach, right? Like that's something we talk about in like threat hunting, is like the evil's there, let's go and find it. So in this case, I mean, it may sound extreme, but I think it's better to prepare for the worst, right? And then circle back later on.
Yeah, definitely. It's also like interesting, like what you were mentioning about, CLOP being so good at what they do. It's a criminal activity, so like we don't want to praise them, but they really stand out when you compare them to the rest of ransomware groups out there. Even the one like more noisy, like Lockbit, that have reached like incredible numbers in the past years, that have, they were noisy also like in the sense of like PR stunts that they've done, like when they ask people to get a tattoo of their name of the Lockbit logo on their skin. Some people did that actually. But CLOP is really at the forefront in terms of like innovation in the ransomware game, in terms of communication strategies, in terms of the way they infect their victims, finding zero-day vulnerabilities. So it's really interesting to see how, like from a threat intelligence point of view, how CLOP does, carries out their activity. Is there anything else that anyone wants to cover on CLOP?
There's a couple things that I would add. One is just building on your point. When you look at threat actors and you look at threat modeling, there's motivation and then there's capabilities.
Yeah.
And sometimes the motivation is high, but the skill set is much lower for an actor to be able to get action on objectives, depending on what they are. The fact that CLOP has been able to do research into Excellion, into Go Anywhere, into MOVEit, to do research, find 0 days, exploit them. It indicates a threat actor with high capability and one to be worried about. And what I wanted to kind of draw on here is, you might be thinking, hey, we're safe, we don't use MOVEit. I feel that I can say with high confidence that Clop is going to target another managed file transfer solution in the future. Like, they're having success there. So the recommendations, and actually we may mention this at the end as well, you know, when this podcast launches, we will have done a webinar, kind of a rapid response webinar, and Steph's going to be on it, I'm going to be on it, and Brandon, that'll be available to you. And so that'll be another area where you can get more information, and we're going to spend, you know, we will have spent a whole hour-ish talking about this. But the key thing is, they're going to go after other solutions. So now is your opportunity. You may be using another solution that's out there. I would recommend that you first make sure that you have a very strong, I mean, Clop's going after 0 days, but you still need to be patching those solutions. One, I'd look at any vendor hardening guidelines that they have and implement any of the hardening that's there. A really key thing in incident response in general is, people don't always have the logs that they need. And we're seeing that here as well. So I would make sure that whatever your managed file transfer system is, that you have your logging enabled. But then critically, you know, your logs are going to roll off after X date. It's going to depend on the solution that's out there. You need to send those logs to your SIM or to an S3 bucket and then hold them. I think Progress was recommending 90 days worth of logs to do a look back. You know, a lot of times companies will not have that length back on some of their systems. So, you know, send those logs for your, and this applies not just to the managed file transfer solutions. Dean and I were talking about this yesterday. It's like any of your external facing stuff, because Clop's, you know, Apex Predator ransomware group, but the others are using initial access brokers, going after Juniper, Citrix, you know, all these other external facing stuff. You need to harden all of them. You need to patch all of them. You need to make sure that you have the logging. You need to restrict to authorize users. You need to have access restricted from a network perspective of who can even talk to these public facing services. So now is your time to do that. The other thing we recommend is that people do a tabletop exercise, right? This situation could happen to you with another ransomware group. So talk through it. You know, you don't want to be trying to figure out between now and June 14th next week, what, 6 days from the day that we're recording this, how you're going to do it. So just because you don't use MOVEit doesn't mean there's not lessons that you can learn to build resiliency in your program going forward.
Yeah. And I just like really want, I really like the stuff that you're saying about like the visibility, and I don't want to sound like too much like an echo chamber, but really a lot of these things, I just wish they wouldn't be the action item that sourced from a breach, right? I wish that we could be a little more proactive in some of these things, right? Because too many times we respond to incidents, XYZ, we don't have visibility, we didn't harden. And then all of those things are after the fact, after the breach, after the intrusion, right? So, I mean, really taking that to heart and, you know, learning from your peers and other organizations and that trial and error, I think, can go a long way. So I think it's really insightful stuff, Rick.
Cool. Perfect. Well, thank you very much, guys. That's been really helpful for me and for everyone in the audience. Let's move on to the second section of the podcast, where we will be talking about info stealing malware. Dean and I and Ivan will be here giving us all the knowledge that we need on this kind of threat. So, Dean, can you tell us more about what's the risk posed by info stealers, how they work, and sort of the most common types that we're seeing on the threat landscape nowadays?
Yeah, so there's a lot of info stealers, and I know Yvonne can help out with naming some of those and some of the monitoring we do. Like the big ones that we see recurring, I don't want to say on a daily basis, but that's probably accurate. We have Vidar, Raccoon, Redline. We see those all the time. We see those logs being published. We see them sometimes free of charge. But for those of you who aren't familiar with what an info stealer is, It literally, the name explains it, right? It steals your information. So I like almost think of it as like evil analytics, but they're going to be stealing your username and password, your cookies. They can take screenshots of your computer, monitor your keystrokes. They have a lot of functionality, and dependent on the info stealer and really what the group is going after, they'll gather varying information. But an example of this though, that I wanted to give is storing passwords in a browser is something that's easy, right? Like I'm sure everyone on this call and everyone listening does that at some point, right? It's just so easy.
Not at all. Never done that.
Never. So I've had some pretty insane use cases where info stealers have actually been installed through malicious advertising or SEO poisoning, wherein that sensitive credentials, you know, to maybe a database or a SIM, whatever it is, right, have actually been harvested from being stored in a browser like that, unbeknownst to the user. And to add another level of obscurity to that, like if those credentials are synced on a company asset to a personal asset and one of those has an info stealer or not, you know, that could actually result in a data breach. And then credentials show up and maybe the next thing you know, Ivan is giving you an email that your company's credentials have shown up in an initial access listing. So really crazy stuff. I don't think they're overlooked, but they're very prevalent on the internet and they have a high success rate.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like maybe they don't make as much noise as ransomware groups, of course, because of the impact they had, but they've always been there. They're always there. And it's a threat that is like ever present. And even what Dean said, does that align with what our closed sources team observed, like on cyber criminal forums? Like, do you have any more insights that you want to add?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Dean said, I mean, we come across so many stealers. Like Dean said, either being advertised or freely shared or even just discussed. And definitely, Redline, Raccoon, and Vidar are some that we see pretty much day to day. There was a lot of new ones that have popped up, such as Observer Stealer, Luma C2, White Snake, Atomic macOS Stealer. They've gotten a lot of traction. There's a lot of discussions and threat actors are talking about, you know, what kind of stealer should I be using? What's popular right now? If we look at Russian market, for example, Redline, Raccoon, and Vidar are constantly on there. So that kind of gives a very good indication of what is very common right now. So yeah, definitely agree with everything that Dean said. And I think the entry point to using those is quite easy. So a lot of threat actors, even with low technical ability, can operate and conduct a lot of attacks. So I definitely agree with that.
So when you talk about like the entry barrier, you know, how are these stealers like being shared among cyber criminals? Like, do you see them being offered for free? Are they put on sale? What do cyber criminals say about them? Like, can you give us more insights about it?
Absolutely. So yeah, both shared freely and advertised. A lot of threat actors are also just trying to see whether or not who's selling the legitimate the stealer, just because there is a lot of scamming that goes along the way in cyber criminal forums. So, you know, we see a lot of requests for Redline, for example, who's actually behind that, who's selling it, who's got legitimate copies. As far as just discussions, yeah, there's quite a lot of, like I said, recommendations that even monitors for the cyber criminal forums are jumping in and saying, hey, you know, I recommend this one or I've used this one. And you take that a little bit more, not to heart, but it's definitely a lot more credible than from a user that we see that has maybe one like or one kind of reaction on the forum and maybe hasn't been on the forum for quite some time. So yeah, definitely we see them shared freely. There's a lot of open source ones found on GitHub that are shared all the time. So a lot of no-named, just private stealers that are being advertised as well. And yeah, it's definitely very interesting to follow. So we're definitely tracking that.
Yeah, sounds like a very crowded environment too, like with a lot of the like competing malware on this sort of ecosystem. Dean, you were mentioning before, you know, don't store your passwords on your browser, which is like cybersecurity 101. Do you have any other tips and strategies for people in order to minimize the threat posed by info stealers that you wanted to share?
So, I mean, one, and I, that's like every single thing that we talk about now, I feel like you can always say like enable MFA. It's not a cure-all. And I mean, MFA can definitely be bypassed, which maybe we can talk about that on a different episode. But going after username and passwords, right? Like, again, like how many times have we responded to something where there's been an account with no MFA, and that would have at least been another bump in the TA's road, right? So it's always really important. Another thing too is GPOs or security policies can actually be pushed to disable browser password saving. So not even giving your employees that option. An alternative to that as well is a password manager. But again, you have to be careful with those as well, because some info stealers actually can target the password managers as well and scrape credentials from there. So they're really nasty in general. And then another thing too is just about how we see info stealers being delivered. And a lot of this through that SEO poisoning and malicious advertising too. So just user awareness, right? You know, the more, in my opinion, the more real world examples we can show to victims and our users, you know, the better understanding they're going to have of like what not to click on, or, you know, what is legit, what they can delete, what they can't. So.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Thank you for sharing that. Ivan, is there anything else that you wanted to add on stealers?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important to talk about also the stealer logs that are being advertised and shared freely. It's interesting because we've come across a couple discussions just from threat actors asking whether or not stealers and the stealer kind of landscape is worth getting into in 2023. And not really to our surprise, we've seen threat actors saying that it's very good in quotes. I mean, they're pretty positive about that. But in terms of stealer logs being advertised, there's a lot less positive opinions on that. And we found threat actors talking about how ever since maybe the last year or two, a lot of the vendors that sell logs are selling duplicates or invalid logs. And realistically, that could come down to all of the Telegram channels that are sharing freely just a bunch of logs, and those threat actors are just taking those in and selling them to make money. And that's kind of what threat actors are saying is, the market for that is now not as good as it used to be. And instead of actually going on those sites and purchasing or on whatever sources that are used, such as Telegram, a lot of advice has been going in just renting out the stealers or developing their own to use. So I think that might be a big reason why we see just an uptick in general in stealers that are even no name. They're private, only a few threat actors get access to those. And I think with the Genesis market takedown too, that we all know about, a lot of users were kind of scrambling to find new shops and say, hey, what is legitimate, what is not. And I think, like I said, with a low entry, that, you know, not a lot of threat actors need to have that technical ability to use the stealers. So I think it's becoming kind of one of those not easier, but definitely popular subjects. So definitely very interesting to follow and kind of want to know what's going to happen next with law enforcement operations and where threat actors go to get the stealers and stealer logs. So
yeah, that's very interesting. I think we need to do like another section of the podcast, like 1, 2, 3 months from now, just to see how this whole ecosystem develops, because it's changing very rapidly, and it's one to keep an eye out for. Moving on
there's
to
a,
the last.
There's a.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to build on some of the stuff Dean said. You know, the browsers are a lot of risk. If you think about your attack service, your browsers are a lot of risk. You know, nefarious Chrome extensions in your browsers are a risk to you as well. So I really just wanted to highlight, you know, Dean was talking about the GPO. You know, using GPOs or whatever browser you might have to enforce, you know, locking them down, restricting what extensions can be installed while you're looking at this. Like, you should do a risk assessment on your browsers, you know, there are risks to it, as Dean alluded to, but if you have a corporate version or an enterprise supplies version of 1Password or LastPass, that could be a good route. I would couple that with MFA, non-SMS based MFA, although SMS based MFA will still help against bottom feeders. But if it's a target attack against you, you know, SMS MFA is going to be toast. That will be trivial for a skilled actor. Again, we get back to actor capabilities. You know, the actors that have high capabilities like Klopp and stuff, they're going to find a way to accomplish their goals. But I don't think the problem is going to go away until passwords go away. You know, we're requiring complex passwords, putting all this friction on our colleagues, on our coworkers, and saving a complex password in a browser is just an easy thing to do. So I don't think we should be, you know, oh, these dumb users are saving their passwords. No, like we need to have a better way to authenticate and authorize actions for our colleagues. And I always use the term our colleagues. I don't like the word users because a lot of times people use users in a very negative term. It's almost like a four-letter word. No, these are our colleagues in the business. They're just trying to get their jobs done. So we need to have frictionless ways to help them make the right choices. So anyway, I'll get off that soapbox and we can move on to the next one, Steph, unless you want to dig into anything else.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Just one small point to add is the fact that, as you were saying, security needs to be as easy as possible. Otherwise, if it's too complicated, it sort of becomes part of the problem. Passwords have been sort of the one of the methods to try and improve security, but there are a lot of issues with that. So yeah, as we've seen, a lot of tech giants are trying to innovate on that point of view. We'll probably see more developments on that in the coming... Sorry?
Passkeys.
So that's where the future is going. Talking about the future, let's look in the future to section 3 of the podcast, where Rick will bring us back to the present because the new DBIR is out. And yeah, as I mentioned before, it comes out on a yearly basis. When it comes out, it's something that you have to read because there's plenty of insights there. Rick, is there anything that you want to highlight from the report to the audience?
So the Verizon Data Breach Investigation Report has been published over 15 years now. I typically do some analysis on it, but because of the MOVEit stuff with Klopp, I haven't been able to do that just yet. But basically, the Verizon Data Breach Report looks at over 15,000 incidents and about 5,200 actual breaches, and they map it to a framework called Verus. So think how we map things to MITRE. Verus is just a way that you describe incidents, and they do all this kind of data analysis on it. I think a lot of people will be familiar with it. However, I still come across folks that are new and aren't as familiar with it. And so they draw out all these key conclusions. It's very interesting because they actually break them out by sector as well. So if you're in a particular sector, you can see what the threats to your sector are, what are the most common techniques. But some of the main trends, and you know, we probably need more time to dig into it in more detail, but some of the main things that stood out to me in this year's report is they look at the type of actor that was the origin of a breach or an incident, and the majority of them are external actors. So in their data set, of those 5,200 breaches, 16,000 incidents, very little is insider threat. I don't think that means we should give up on insider threat. People should have an insider threat program, but a lot of this is external actors. And then the next bit is most of these are financially motivated incidents and breaches. So while APTs are definitely out there, as we've seen just in the past 3 weeks with Typhoon in the news, you know, that's going to depend on your threat model. I think most organizations should have financially motivated cyber criminals as the top thing in their threat actor, and probably opportunistic at the top. Klopp's being very opportunistic right now with their targeting. A couple of the ways that they highlight are main ways that people get in. Number one is credentials. So let's call back to our Steeler conversation there. People are getting in with credentials. So the report just validates that you really need to have multi-factor authentication going. Email phishing is another vector. And obviously a lot of the ransomware groups will use email for their initial access to get in to then begin their activities. There was a larger number of jumps this year from social engineering related stuff. So, you know, not end users, right? Our employees are being socially engineered into clicking on things, going to different places there. And they also make a distinction, and I always like to call this too, like you might have, you know, there's accidental insiders and then there's malicious insiders. There's actually more accidental insiders than malicious insiders, right? People just clicking the wrong things. Again, we need to help people make the right choices, you know, not sit on the sidelines and yell, well, why did you click on this or why did you do that? those are probably the main things that I would call out. The way I always like recommend people use them is you can use this report to right now we're doing 2024 planning for next year. So you can take data from this, the sector call outs, and you can use that to help provide evidence on why you need to have, you know, a solution that's going to be monitoring for exposed credentials that are out there, why you need to be capturing those and making sure that that's not going to be an access, initial access into your organization. So it's a great report. It's almost 90 pages. So it's a long read. I broke it up into chunks. I usually read through it, make notes, and then I'll come back and kind of form thoughts around it. So it's a really good report and I would recommend it. And we can put it in the show notes for everybody as well.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, thank you very much for that sort of summary and key insights about DBIR. As Rick mentioned, it's going to be in the show notes. So definitely one that you can read over the weekend or whenever you want. So this marks the end of today's episode. As we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, Rick, Brandon and I will be on a webinar about the movie Klopp story. It's going to be like a 1 hour sort of webinar where we'll dive into what happened, what's going to happen next, how to improve and harden your environment and everything that you should know about what's happening. So definitely keep an eye out for that. It's going to be in the show notes as well. Along with that, we've published our second blog on the same story. We published the first one last week, and then there's an update that's gone out yesterday, which was the 7th of June. And there's also a new blog on the Ball Typhoon story as well. So a lot of content this week as well. One more thing from Rick.
I was just going to say we're less than 2 weeks out now from InfoSec. So I'll actually be over in London for InfoSec. So if any of our European listeners are there, feel free to reach out. I've got time to meet with customers, prospects, partners, friends, that sort of stuff. And we'll also do probably in 2 weeks' time, we'll do probably a session from London kind of talking about what we saw at InfoSec. So stay tuned for more on that as well.
Oh, perfect. So thank you for that. Thank you, Dean, Ivan, Rick, for your insight as always. And I'll speak to you next week. Bye-bye.